Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As one miserable year ends in Foxborough with the dismissal of the hand-selected successor to Bill Belichick in Gerard Mayo, a new era begins with the search for the 16th coach of the New England Patriots. Will it be Mike Vrabel, and is it his job to lose like so many of us think? And what be of the executive vice president of player personnel who's currently still in power, Elliot Wolf, Alonzo Highsmith and company? Will the new coach have to work hand in hand with them on drafts, free agency, and more? We'll find out with one of the best in the business who knows what's up and then some. Mr. Henry McKenna of Fox Sports joins us today on the latest and always greatest edition of Six Rings and Football Things, coming to you live today as well on the Fitzy GFY and WEEI socials. Henry, have you taken a second just to sort of like stop, get off the sidewalk onto your own personal or professional porch and just say, hot damn, that's a lot going down for an organization that used to be like the picture and the pillar of stability?
I think over the process of writing the Drake May feature that came out last Friday,
right,
trying to fit in, it ended up being 3,600 words, which I'm sorry to anyone who tried to read it. I deeply apologize. I asked my editor to delete as much as he could.
A quick question. I do the Sunday news and notes column for WEEI now, the Sunday 7, and I always intend on it being like 750 to 1,000 words. And it ends up, just because there's so much shit going on with this team right now, 2,000 words is the floor on these things all the time now. Like, we appreciate the richness of content that this team and its unfortunate dysfunction has given us recently. But holy smokes, wouldn't it be nice to just check in and be like, everything's great. We'll see you in April.
Right. I mean, yeah, to properly contextualize everything that's happened this year, simply to Drake May, one player on the team, I feel like I fell short at the end. Like, I didn't think like I properly set up the potential of Mayo's firing, even though I did mention it. There were a number of things from my conversation with Elliot Wolf and Alex Van Pelt that didn't end up making it into the piece altogether. So, it's been a really, really busy final month for the organization. These days, I'm actually a national NFL writer for Fox Sports.
Right.
And, I'm based in the Boston area. I kind of cut my teeth a little bit on the Patriots beat for 6 years or 7 years or who knows how long. And I felt myself drawn back to the building at the end of the year because of what you're saying, which is like things are moving. There's a lot of momentum, and it's not all, I mean, it's basically all downward if we're being honest, right? Like the team was circling the drain and a lot of things were going wrong. And I just wanted to be around the building to have a sense of what exactly wasn't working and who exactly wasn't working and why exactly wasn't it working. So fascinating and sort of sad descent for this team driving into Gillette the last 2 weeks, seeing, you know, that I didn't have any issue getting into the building, no traffic really, seeing the empty lots. There's that one dirt lot
that's right behind Route 1 Liquors. Yeah, it's one of my, it's usually one of the liveliest lots.
Yeah,
with some of the most diehard fans. And the last couple of years, tell me if this tracks with what you saw on Sunday on a ride where I got off 495 and the 4.5 miles it takes coming up for 495 south to Route 1. That 4.5 miles of Route 1, I didn't tap my brakes once until I got to the stadium. I didn't even see a tailgate until 3/4 of a mile from the stadium. But looking at Route 1, it was a ghost yard and it was all Bills Mafia.
It was sort of depressing to see the genuine fall. I was at Chiefs camp, Kansas City Chiefs camp earlier this year. And
that must have been fun.
It was.
I remember that.
And and someone there said to me, "This too shall pass," because I was talking about three-peat and they were trying to sort of contextualize the difficulty of three-peating, the difficulty of doing what the Patriots did. And, you know, the six rings icon is just above my head here. that is so rare. It's so uncommon. And it's history. But what we've now seen is that the Patriots are just like everybody else. In fact, in some ways, they're kind of worse than everyone else because they've fallen prey, I think, a little bit of hubris, where they thought that, you know, Bill Belichick thought he could do it without Tom, and now Kraft thought he could do it without Bill. And now we've seen you remove two goats from the equation and you descend into irrelevance. Not just I'm sorry to really beat Patriots fans while they're down.
No. Like we need to take this beating. We like, right. Like I, you know me, like I dabble half in the fandom and half in the media as well. And I appreciate being able to inform one side with the passion and feelings of the other, but like walking around those lots, those ghostly lots on Sunday, Henry, like this Bills fan, diehard late 50 something Bills fan came up to me at the behest of a Pats fan who he was tailgating with, put his arm around me and he asked, "Hey buddy, you want some advice on what it's like to suck for a long time? Because I can tell you, enjoy life on the bottom, kid." And I just, you know, I had a laugh and I said, it's okay. If this is the tax I have to pay for the 20 years of dominance, I get it. But it shouldn't be this bad, man. It really shouldn't.
Well, technically it should, because the NFL creates, you know, competitive balances to do exactly what's happened to the Patriots, which is that they were the kings of the league for so long. You know, the idea of a competitive balance is it supposed to bring franchises like New England crashing down to earth? It's actually why I really didn't like the Gerard Mayo firing. I get that it was, you know, a terrible year for him. Publicly facing, things did not look coherent. And it sounds, you know, Mike Giardi did a good job putting something out. I think it was this morning.
Yes, he
just
did.
Sort of like surveying the locker room about whether the inconsistencies we saw as media members and fans saw, you know, probably through the content that radio and TV and writers like ourselves were creating, there was, to some degree, that level of dysfunction and mixed messaging happening behind the scenes too, right? So Gerard was in over his head, in part because he got set up a little bit to fail, as Kraft said, and in part because the team didn't have the talent that they needed. And that was a twofold problem. They were identifying talent in sort of like an inadequate way. This draft class beyond Drake May is a disappointment by any measurement. I don't care if next year they don't, you know, they turn things around. Some of your rookies have to contribute in their rookie season when your team is this bad, right? Like some of them can contribute to the field.
Yeah, contribute to your team's effort to play good football and turn the organization around, not contribute to the other team winning. Because right. that feels like all the, like, you know, Tyquan Thornton and Cole Strange was out most of the year and he tried at center. And I appreciate that because we're not sure if David Andrews is going to be able to come back at the previous Pro Bowl level that he played at for many years. But nobody on this year's team, poor Jalen Polk, that guy is going to be afraid to show his head in a Pats uniform or anywhere in Foxborough until at least he plays one positive preseason, if not professional game that counts again next fall. Like it, I've mentioned it 1,000 times on this podcast and I'll say it again. I still ache where my football soul resides for the Patriots trading out of 34, giving up McConkey, who just looked like he was grown in a laboratory to play for the Patriots, and taking the value play of Polk and Baker and whatever else they got out of the trade. Like it was a measure too clever when the team just needed BPA, best player available in free agency or any of those drafts, Henry.
Yeah. So there's the talent evaluation shortcomings that happened that Gerard had to manage. And then, you know, internally, the staff didn't come together in the way that they wanted because they got off a lot of castoffs from losing teams. Those guys weren't adept at bringing in this talent and making the most out of them,
right?
Which was what Bill was so good at. And speaking of Buffalo, it's what Sean McDermott, the coach there, is so good at. And finally, the team was so cataclysmically bad and had this reputation as an organization of being about to be a dumpster fire even before the season started, that guess who didn't want to play there? Brandon Ayuk and Calvin Ridley. Guess who didn't want to come here? Liam Cohen and Nick Cayley, right? At least those were the reports that the Patriots were interested smartly in improving their offense through coaching and coaches who are talented and proven to be so this year. So it was a good idea, and receivers that are talented. And yet because of where they stood, particularly with the quarterback, with sort of two in the bush and none in the hand, they were left with nobody because the recruiting process was impossible. So this is where things start to get a little more positive. And this was why I wrote that Drake May feature, mm-hmm. is that with him, anyone who watches the film of him sees a player that has the capabilities to turn this organization around. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, he's maybe one of, like, I don't know, 2-3 offensive starters that I think will retain their jobs next year. Hunter Henry and Mike Onwenu, I think, make sense as guys that will probably be back as starters. But otherwise, they've got to rebuild completely around May. And I think what we'll see this offseason is whether the optimism around May is widely held around the league, or whether it's just New England who feels sort of optimistic about the kid.
Yeah. When it comes to, there's a lot of people that are watching live right now that are commenting, saying that it was a shame. Like, you don't see this too often, because the sentiment with the Fire Mayo chants and people wearing Gerard Mayo jerseys and then taping fire above or to the side of the name, walking into the stadium Sunday, the paper bags, the absolute toxic wasteland that has been all the replies to Patriots social media and anyone or anything involved around, even aggregators at this point now are like, well, I might need to take a break, because I just can't handle the negativity was suffocating the last several weeks. And Mayo was getting almost all of the blame that people felt for players, for Wolf, and for ownership funneled his way, which wasn't fair. So in a lot of ways, I felt like if he was going to be dismissed, and I think we all knew by the time Schefter said Sunday morning that he was leaning towards being fired as opposed to retained, that it was going to happen. This was an admission of guilt and wrongdoing by the Kraft, by Robert Kraft and the organization. This was an optics move, and it basically is a flush, because they just need to calm the nerve endings of the fans and everyone associated with the team down. Whether or not Gerard Mayo was prepared, we know he wasn't. Whether or not Gerard Mayo needed more seasoning, we know he did. Whether or not he could be a good coach one day, I think he might, but this wasn't the time. You never want to be the guy that follows a legend. It was a crap show of an operation all year. You mentioned Giardi. He put, for anyone who didn't get a chance to read his piece on Boston Sports Journal behind the paywall, one veteran told me, "I lost faith we were headed in the right direction." "When?" asked Giardi. "In the spring." "Why?" he followed up. "It felt like they were making it up as they went along. It was amazing how one day it would be this, and then the next day something completely different." With another veteran adding, "It became more about looking myself in the mirror and the guys in my room and huddle and saying, I'm leaving it out here for you, because I never believed that we ever had an edge in coaching." That's damning. And I don't think that's anyone like kicking a horse or a player or person when they're down. That's just the sad reality of what was created. And I think you nailed it. They were a power triumvirate that operated better than any in the NFL or maybe professional sports this century, Henry. Then you lose Brady. It's a lot harder. But Belichick believes he can do it. He almost did. He didn't. Mac Jones flames out. That's a whole different equation. Matt Patricia once told me on the side, I'm only allowed to say as much, but he said, one day I'll let everybody know about Mac Jones. And I'm sure you probably have your own feelings and stories about that as well. And then Kraft gets rid of Belichick because he's so mad about the drafts and Belichick's power grabs. And now Belichick is clapping back in social media. It's just become, it's nuts. Like, you need somebody to come in and tell everyone to shut up and like hit the restart button. And that might have to be Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, Mike Vrabel makes a lot of sense. I think here's the concern I have is if Vrabel's going to be a hot candidate, and from what I understand, mostly just from what other people are reporting, that Vrabel is interested in the Patriots job. It's just that, like, there are a lot of other jobs out there, and he's going to be a top candidate for all of them. Mm-hmm. So, and then people talk about Ben Johnson. I know he's like a highly selective coach. He's not afraid to go back to Detroit in the same way that Josh McDaniels was often doing in New England, getting sort of courted, but not always ending up joining teams, not as dramatically as, for example, the Colts situation. But sure. I think Ben Johnson is definitely professional about it, but he's definitely going to be discerning. And I know the Patriots situation does look good on paper in that they have a quarterback, they have a high draft pick, and they have a lot of money. But I also think, like, look a little bit under the hood and you see a team that just got an F, I believe, in the NFLPA player poll, which was among the bottom of the league.
Like 27th overall in facilities and player development. Yeah.
Right. There's the fact that the whole front office is in place right now, sort of like at the waiting of what happens with the head coach. So what does Ben Johnson want to do about the current front office? Does he trust them? Does he want to be so dramatic as to bring in a whole new front office? Then how does he staff that out? I think there's logistic. Oh, and then not to mention that Kraft just fired a coach after 1 year. Like, that doesn't happen very often in the NFL. It happens quite rarely. Urban Meyer is a guy. The Jaguars, right? The Texans did this with David Culley. The truly
Vance Joseph, like a hall of shame. Absolutely.
Yeah. The truly basement organizations have done this, and it doesn't help them turn around quicker. Often it actually helps secure their spot at the bottom of the league for a longer period of time. So I don't know. Ben Johnson does make sense, you know, probably to Patriots fans. And like I said, the paper argument is there. I get a little bit worried about being over optimistic for New England, thinking that they're going to get him just because he's going to wait for the best possible situation. I'm not sure that's exactly what New England has. So Vrabel, he makes sense if you can get him. Mm-hmm. And if you can't, then what the heck are you going to do? I don't know that you're going to get a coach that much better than Jerod Mayo because of all of the things I just described. So, I mean, maybe you take a risk on Liam Cohen, who you couldn't get as an OC, but maybe he'll come as a head coach now because this would be a little bit early to strike on him. Mm-hmm. But I think the point is they've put themselves in an awkward situation because now they also cannot fire the guy quickly. Like, not that they would want to fire another coach after 1 year, but like 2 years would seem fast. And then the last thing I'll say about Vrabel too is, like, because you can't fire a guy quickly, and because Vrabel has a Belichickian disposition, and because mm-hmm. Mayo comes from the Belichick tree, even if his disposition isn't Belichickian, there were a lot of overlaps, including the front office, again, shifting the sort of like scheme for scouting, but not necessarily shifting the people in place who are trained by Bill. Point is, if Vrabel fails next year, for example, again, you cannot fire him. You have to wait until year two and maybe even year three. And by the end of that, we will be three to four years removed of Belichick, and we will not have seen anyone who is technically outside the Belichick tree. And you can ask yourself and ask Kraft at that point, like, what changes have you really made over the course of this organization to make it better? Because all you've done is hire your friends, the right people that you know closely. And that's probably why Kraft emphasized that he's gonna really be thorough in the search, not just keep Vrabel at the top of the list, and rather look at people, you know, beyond him. But I don't know. I think Vrabel does have some similarities from Belichick, even if he is just a former player and he didn't actually come up in Belichick's coaching tree.
A viewer who's watching live as we record the latest Six Rings podcast with Henry McKenna from Fox Sports. David Tressel says, our biggest problem, identity and culture. I would say those are big problems. I still believe the biggest problem by far wasn't Mayo, wasn't his coaching staff or their lack of preparation or experience. It's still talent, 100%. That's the worst roster I've ever seen the Patriots trot out, or at least since before I wasn't wearing bum equipment shirts and Z Cavaricci jeans to the games 30-something years ago. Like, it's bad. Worst in run blocking, worst in pass blocking, and it wasn't close. Lowest in pressure rate on defense, lowest in sacks in the NFL. The glaring holes were evident from Jump Street. It was a UDFA, UFL, and partially NFL-based roster. And so that's now what gives everyone their latest pause, Henry, which is, okay, cool. Vrabel, which is a familiar name, and I know he's a hard ass, and he's a giant human being, and he's intimidated, and he takes a DGAF attitude into the room and on the sidelines, and that's what we need.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See Home Club for details.
There are those obviously who are still a little fearful of Robert Kraft clutching to the past as he tries to look to the future and fix things with a guy like Vrabel, but certainly seems like he'd be more prepared than Jerod Mayo. However, you had a chance to speak with Elliot Wolf, and I think a lot of people, that's why I bring up that this is the latest bitching point for Pats fans. It's like, cool, so Mayo was a problem, but also the guy that helped pick all the players that made for many of the problems for Mayo, he gets to stick around. And I like Elliot Wolf. Like, I've enjoyed my conversations with him. I know his history and his pedigree, but like, that free agent class was bad. Last year's draft was real bad. And I don't think we need 2 or 3 years to legislate on that one. And the previous drafts, of which I don't know exactly how much he had to do with them, but I had a feeling it was a little bit, they were also not great, and that's a major reason why the Pats are where they are right now. So what's your theory on why Elliot Wolf is he in stasis with the organization, or is he still like in a positive place of power for them going forward?
It's very much, I think, up in the air, just given the way that Kraft was hesitant to give like an exact answer. He's staying with the organization, and then it's a question of who comes in at coach and how much they want to bring in someone above or beside Wolf. So it's tricky because the scouting world doesn't move as fluidly as the coaching world. We see massive coaching changes because the coaches make a little bit more money than the scouts, and the scouts on the other hand tend to like kind of survive like leadership changes. So you know the regional scouts will stay in place even with a GM leaving. So I'm not totally sure exactly how the Elliot Wolf leadership chain of command will proceed, because I don't think that they know how that it will proceed. I think they'll probably be in the building, but there is the possibility that a new head coach will bring in a new GM, and that new GM will probably could bring in lieutenants that they prefer to grow in Wolf, and then that makes them redundancies. So tough position, I would say, for Wolf currently, sort of like waiting. And I think to your point that there are lots more questions about what Wolf has accomplished, both in his role as a lieutenant under Groh, when Groh was sort of like the de facto GM,
right?
But really like the number two to Bill, which made Wolf the three. And then they kind of flip-flopped where Groh became Wolf's lieutenant and the draft didn't improve all that much. So, you know, whether you want to criticize Wolf's free agency methods, like I would refrain from doing that, if only because, like I was talking about, I think they had their eyes on the right players and they tried to overpay the right players, and still the right players wouldn't take the excessive contracts that should have gotten them, but because the Patriots were like, it's sort of this systemic failure where like, what was Jerod supposed to do? He couldn't get the talent he didn't have any talent. What was Elliot Wolf supposed to do? He couldn't get any talent, right? So this is what happens when teams are this low on the totem pole, is like you can't bring in good players and you can't bring in good coaches. And so you kind of can't get out of this hole. That's why Vrabel is a bit of a life raft, because he can staff out a very good roster of coaches, that is. And that might help, especially with Drake May at the helm in free agency.
Right.
So it's tough. It's tough to boot a guy like Wolf out after 1 year. And I think
at his position,
I think you just got to, even if it doesn't look good right now, you probably want to let it ride for 1 year. But I also don't know what the next coach will think. And I wouldn't blame them in a situation that's as pressurized as this one for bringing in their own guy to call the shots.
Yeah. I mean, if he and some others continue to help evaluate talent, negotiate deals, bring some names to the table, but a guy like Vrabel comes in and says, no, this is the guy that I want reporting directly to me. Let him run the room. I respect your acumen, but I'm now the big man on campus, and this is the way that we're going to do things. I have a feeling, and I think I've heard as much, I'm not sure if it was from Phil Perry or Tom Kern or whatever, that, you know, Elliot Wolf, who seems like a very clinical and level-headed guy, would be amenable to that, just because he is on the younger side of being a GM or an EVP of player personnel and such. I know a lot of people, I read just before we started recording today, Byron Leftwich is going to interview with the Patriots. So it's interesting to see. They're going to interview Ben Johnson. He's going to zoom in from Detroit. Obviously, he's getting ready for a big game in a week and a half. Ben Solak of ESPN, he was banging the drum a couple days ago saying that's the best job for Ben Johnson in the league, just because he's so high on Drake May. I think, coming to the Matriots, as I've been calling them, because that's the only identity they have right now, Henry, it seems like a fun job. It seems like a good job, but I feel like you almost need somebody like Vrabel who knows, like, okay, first, before I redesign the house, I have to go down in the basement, put on gloves, a mask, and boots, and throw out all the shit everyone else left behind. Then we can start redesigning the house. But then we'll bring in a landscaper. Then we'll get solar on the roof and all that jazz. We're not worried about picking a cable provider or where the hot tub's going to go. And, you know, throw away your dreams of a Tuscan kitchen. We just need this house to be livable at this point, because it's a mess. So I'm with you. I think a lot of people are with you. But this could be, to me, the biggest. And real quick before I get to this point, and then we'll wrap it. Do you think there's any chance? It's been mentioned, but do you think there's any chance Vrabel would reach out to or has been in touch with, like, you know, as he's making his power plays to let Robert Kraft know, like, hey, I wouldn't mind coming home. I'd like this job. I want, and it's a risky proposition to coach where you once played. Do you think he would be in touch with a McDaniels?
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that McDaniels would come back. I think that it's clear McDaniels' future in coaching is at coordinator. His head coaching acumen was lackluster, to say the least, but he is absolutely a competent and comfortable and impressive, frankly, coordinator.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like we have so much positive examples of it, and I think Mac Jones's spiral, both under sort of the other coordinators and even under Doug Peterson in Jacksonville, he looks like a whole different player without Josh McDaniels. So I think it's pretty proven and clear that he would be a very good candidate. Again, if you're Kraft and you're trying to control the optics of all of this, are you just bringing in Bill Belichick's cast again after firing Bill Belichick? Like, why wouldn't you just rehire Bill if you're just going to bring in, you know, Bill Belichick Jr. and Bill Belichick's posse? Like, is Joe Judge going to come back and coach special teams again? Which would be fine. He is a very good special
teams. Jeremy Springer's the only guy who did a good job this year. Plus, he's a delightful interview and a very upbeat, positive guy. Did you ever get a chance to talk with him?
I actually didn't talk to him much this year.
He's a dude.
Yeah. But yeah, Judge would be a great special teams coordinator. Like, nothing against him as that. That is a very good role for him. But look, are we just trying to relive the glory days, or are we trying to think forward about how to make Drake May and that whole offense the best it can possibly be? So I think that's what I would ask myself. And if I were in Kraft's shoes, I would ask Vrabel if Vrabel was thinking that he was going to bring in McDaniels, like who else can we think about that might put this offense in a more forward thinking position? Is that McDaniels, or should we be thinking about guys like Nick Caley, who Caley's been in LA. He's not the OC yet there, but that would be a step forward for him. And it's, I think, one that he's ready for. And there are certainly other guys around the league that would be worth taking a look at. So I think that's the one thing, is like stasis versus progress. And then you don't want to get caught in the trap of, okay, well, McDaniels actually might even be the best offensive coordinator candidate out there. Do you want to just like pick someone young and new for the sake of having someone young and new when you've got a good candidate? So,
right. Like, oh, do we go with the fancy new restaurant in town that everyone's buzzing about? Yeah, but our favorite Italian restaurant where we've never had a bad meal has an open table tonight. It's even seated by the kitchen where we love sitting. Like, that's all that. Sometimes don't overthink the chicken parm. You know what I mean? Just go with what you love because they do it really well. So last thing, you mentioned Bill Belichick, and obviously going back and hiring Belichick, you can't hire him now because Chapel Bill is wild, and he was FaceTiming in from a car with Steve yesterday on the Pat McAfee show on a recruiting trip. And it looks like he has a renewed sense of energy and youth, and I'm thrilled. Couldn't be happier for him. He and Steve, like, the family's happy. They're going to live in an awesome area. It's going to be great. I think a game day from Chapel Hill is going to be wild next year. I can't wait to go to a game. I think we're all going to have a renewed interest or a greater sense of interest in college football in New England, an area that is not necessarily rife with major college sports fans and great tailgates, obviously. But you mentioned Bill, and let's wrap with this. He said on the Let's Go podcast Monday night, a line that I think resonates and probably stings pretty bad. He said, I'm not sure if he said it to Scratchy or whoever he said it to, but he said, quote, in regard to the Patriots, you need that shared vision between ownership and coaching and scouting, and that's when you can be successful. I had that up until about the last 4 years in New England, end quote.
Oh, whew, I missed that one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
a doozy.
Yeah. That's a teaching point and a dagger all at once.
Well, I think to counterpoint Bill, like, winning cures all ills, and he started losing, you know, in the last 4 years. So you get rid of the best quarterback of all time and people are going to question you. Welcome to New England. Like, he needs no reminder that that's the environment that Boston presents is one of skepticism. And then, you know, you don't have a great season in that first year. And then it really starts to go downhill quickly, with the exception of that one Mac Jones season where they won and done it, which wasn't all that great of a year because they got blown out, never had a shot.
Were you when Devontae Bosby started at cornerback? Oh my god, that game.
What game was that? I don't even remember.
That was that game. Like, the Patriots were so decimated and deep on the defensive side. Right. They pulled a guy off the street 4 days, but Devontae Bosby.
Yeah. Bleak.
What a time. What a time. Yep. Anyway.
So I forgot. Wow. That is a deep cut. And I appreciate whoever brought that up. I love that. I think ultimately, like, Bill's got a point. It's also like every single Bill Belichick biting, snarky line that he's delivered at the Patriots has always come with a caveat, because Bill can never be wrong. And it's very convenient for him to dance on the grave of New England at this point. But it does get back to what we've been sort of discussing at great length, which is, okay, you replace Gerard, and Gerard was on the same page with Elliott at least at the season's start, and Kraft was on the same page as the two guys who were leading. So now what? Now you're going to replace Gerard with a new head coach. And you need to bring in, if it's going to be, you know, a defensive head coach, you need to bring in an offensive coordinator who's on the same page, right? And can elevate this quarterback, which is the most important asset that this organization has. You need to invest with an OC, and then you need a personnel executive who is bought in on that coach's and that coordinator's vision. And then you need Kraft overseeing it all and funding it properly. So that is what Belichick's saying. you don't have to just look at it as like what failed this year, but think about it for as they're hiring, whether, you know, look at that rubric, look at that blueprint that Bill Belichick's laid out. He knows what he's talking about. And so you can sort of start to evaluate, you know, how this next iteration of the Patriots organization will look and whether it will be successful.
Yeah. The other day on Tom Curran's podcast, Brian Hoyer said, football is all about relationships. And unless you are able to cultivate functional ones between coaches and quarterbacks, coaches and coordinators, coaches, quarterbacks, players, and ownership, then you're just doomed to have a mess and a dysfunctional operation and fail over and over again. So to me, last year, it feels like they handpicked Mayo, told no one else, or at least other people knew, but they weren't on board with it. And then they just, it's like throwing a party. Like, and then he just invited a bunch of random guests and said, I like all of you individually. Now I want you all to get along. That doesn't make for a great party. So going forward, let's hope that Robert Kraft, Jonathan, and the organization pick someone to be in charge of the Evite list vis-a-vis of Vrabel and then say, okay, now you invite everyone else that you want to be there so we can have a functional good time and then we can get back to winning ways, or at least traffic on Route 1 and people actually shopping at the pro shop as opposed to walking by and sadly thumbing their nose at it. Henry, this has been awesome, man. Thank you. I'm so glad you were available today. I appreciate this so much. You guys give him a follow at Henry C. McKenna. He is a national NFL football reporter for Fox Sports with a bent and some history in the wide world of New England Patriots as well. His 3 million word tome on, on Drake May is available. You can just click through on his Twitter feed as well. It's a great read. And he does great stuff. I won't see you around the stadium for a while, my friend, but anytime we have you on the podcast, I always leave with saying, if we ever see each other on social occasion, first round is on me and don't be a stranger, okay?
Perfect. Love it. I appreciate you and thank you for having me on.
Thanks, Henry. This is the this has been the latest Six Rings and Football Things podcast brought to you by WEEI Odyssey and 2400 Sports. We'll be in touch very soon as news breaks in New England. Stay tuned to WEEI for the latest in information, analysis, perspective, and more. Have a good day, everybody. God bless, and as always, go Pats.